Psalm 24. This psalm is a part of a liturgical celebration of victory, battle victory, or it might be the enthronement of Yahweh in the New Year festival. The New Year festival, that's the Feast of Tabernacles, it's often called, and that all the prayers are about Genesis, creation of the world. They celebrate the founding of the temple. It's all their big religious cultic symbols are brought in, as you'd expect, on a new year. Our new year, of course, starts in 2 weeks' time, doesn't it? Next Sunday is the Feast of Christ the King, and then we begin the new year with a gradual build-up to Christmas. So, with the Advent. There are echoes in this psalm, you might see, of Moses setting up the tabernacle. Stories found in Exodus chapter 40. David transferring the ark into Jerusalem city when he captured the city. That's in 2 Samuel 6. And there are echoes also of the return from exile, which you find in many places, but Ezekiel 43 is a text you might want to look up. And you'll find it all echoing in this prayer. Yahweh, the creator of the universe, has chosen Zion for his dwelling. I've said before, Zion is the name for Jerusalem, not the physical Jerusalem, but the Jerusalem as the place of the temple and the place of the Davidic dynasty. So it's got that special historical religious slant on the word. But it's identical with Jerusalem, of course. The city must be worthy of God's presence, and its inhabitants must be committed to the truth, living lives that are good from pure hearts. And we can read this psalm without a lot of commentary. The earth is Yahweh's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. He has founded it on the waters, on the seas, and established it on the flowing waters. To establish the world on flowing waters, you probably know already, but you may not, so it does need a bit of explanation, because you're dealing with their cosmology, their understanding of the world and the way it came to be, which was quite primitive and quite beautiful and quite mythical and quite imaginative, but not physically accurate. But according to the understanding of the day, under the land there are subterraneous waters, and these are connected to the ocean. Now, the ocean is not the sea. The sea, of course, for them is the Mediterranean, isn't it? And the ocean is this chaotic waters that were there before creation. And they surround the whole flat earth, is surrounded by the oceans. And they're all underneath it. The subterranean water, they know it's there because it wells up in springs. And it wells up in rivers that come out of the mountains. So it's that kind of thing. That's why rivers and seas have got no connection, really. Sea is like a big lake organized on the surface. But these are the waters that well up from the ocean. And that was typical of all the people of the day, thought like that. So the underneath the world, the pillars go down into the chaos. No one asked, I think, how the pillars stood up in the chaos. I mean, you can ask enough questions, but you got to stop sometimes. So I don't know how they worked all that out. Give thanks to Yahweh, who spread out the earth on the waters, for his kindness endures forever. That's Psalm 136:6. Speaking of God as creator, we might just reflect on a couple of references to that, though there are many. Here's Isaiah 51, part of the second Isaiah book. I've put my words in your mouth. I have hidden you in the shadow of my hand, stretching out the heavens and laying the foundations of the earth, and saying to Zion, you are my people. God is the one who stretched out the heavens, which are firm, of course. It's a firmament. It's a big dome thing, starting on the hill of the mountains of Atlas in North Africa. They thought that was the end of the world, going up to probably the Caucasian mountains, and I don't know where their limits were, and they didn't know either, but they had it stuck there to keep it all clear and keep the waters up there out too. except every now and then God opened the sluice gates and the rain came down, which is the waters up above the firmament, as they understood it. Zechariah 12, thus says Yahweh, who stretched out the heavens and founded the earth and formed the human spirit within. Lovely touch. Book of Job, the great philosopher. Where were you, says God to Job at the end? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you understand. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Job is claiming to know a lot, and God is letting him know how little he knows. And at the end, it's beautiful. Job says, I've spoken once, I've spoken twice, it's too much. Finger on lip, I'll now listen. So he's matured and become a little humble. Knows how little he knows. And here's God alerting him to it. And of course, Job alerting his community, who seemed to know all about God and what we had to do and what we couldn't do and who was in and who was out. And, you know, the whole system was all very clear. And this inspired philosopher saying, look, mate, it's not as clear as all this. And how much do you priests reckon you know anyhow about all this? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Who stretched the line upon it? What were its bases sunk? Who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and the heavenly beings shouted for joy? It's good stuff. The Book of Job's just lovely. Lovely stuff. So the psalm continues, verse 3, asking the moral question now. Who is able to ascend the mount of Yahweh? That's obviously Zion. Who can stand in his holy place? And the answer, the one who has clean hands and a pure heart. Clean hands, in other words, what we hands, it's not interested in your hands being washed. Clean hands means what your hands are doing is good. Hands are about action. So your actions are good, you have clean hands, and your heart is pure, so your intentions are also beautiful. Who doesn't deflect his longing to idols? So what am I longing for? What are you longing for? What's our world longing for? What are the young people longing for? What does the public media say is really worth doing for kids just as they're in their last year of school? What's important for them? Get a good job next year. Well, of course, that is important, but is that where their longings are? Is that the real deepest thing, or are we trivializing youth? Who does not deflect his longings to idols, cultural idols? The Baals and the Ashtartes of this world, nor take oaths deceitfully. In other words, entering the temple should be an expression of our longing to be in communion with God. That's what we want, the sacred. And the psalm continues, verse 5, such a one will receive blessing from Yahweh and justice from the God who saves. Such is the company of those who seek him, who seek your face, O God of Jacob. Lift up your heads, O gates. The gates are too small of the city. They're whopping big gates, but they have to be higher to let God in, you know. That's obviously a beautiful image, a powerful image. Well, here's the story of David. There's no temple yet, but bringing into the city, the gates of the city. 2 Samuel chapter 6. David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of Yahweh had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling. David danced before Yahweh with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. Just enough to cover you know what. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of Yahweh with rejoicing and with the sound of trumpet. And I have to tell you, if you want to read on, David's wife was not impressed with this male show, showing more than he was meant to show too, by the look of it. And she thought he should have been rather more modestly attired. Anyhow, but the beauty part of the story is, to hell with everything. He was so full of joy, who cares? Like, you know, he just gave it his best and danced and were joyful, and we're meant to admire it. If he did it every day, well, he obviously would have problems, but he was only doing it on this major day. And here's the conclusion of our psalm. Who is the King of Glory? Verse 8, Yahweh, the valiant hero, Yahweh, mighty in battle. So lift up your heads, O gates, be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of Glory may enter. And then the priests probably at the door say, and they're belting on the door, and he says, Who is the King of Glory? And the answer comes back, Yahweh of hosts, he's the King of Glory. And the great portcullis, or whatever it is, rises up, or the gates are opened, and they enter. I mention just a little bit of a note there. It happens that this psalm in the liturgy is said on the feast of dedication of a church, for very obvious reasons, and also on feasts of Mary, the one who held the King of Glory in her womb. So the gates, it's now, you know, very, she becomes the symbol of the church beautifully, because she's the one who nurtured the real presence in her tabernacle of her own body. Well, you mums and all understand that very beautifully.